Here's someone I have been looking forward to chatting to and getting in the studio. It's a little bit of a different experience for him because normally he is on this side of the microphone. What a great pleasure to welcome none other than John McKenzie onto the King Review. John, how are you?
Thank you, Gavin. I'm so pleased you gave me so much notice. What is it, 90 seconds ago?
You got about 90 seconds 90 of preparation.
Seconds to prepare, exactly.
But you're used to it. Which is exactly what I want to talk about. The context, I guess, for our chat, John, is 4CA is celebrating 85 years on air. It is a slightly odd number, but it's good to celebrate nonetheless. You, of course, have been the face of 4CA for so long. I just wanted to dig into your memory and really talk about the importance of radio in general. First of all, for those who may not know, or I'm sure you, because you're a bit reluctant, you're a bit of a shy gentleman. Tell us about radio. The spark for you to get into radio in the first place.
I happen to know the only reason you're interviewing me now is because someone 4 minutes ago cancelled, I'm sure. You saw me in the hallway and said, you'll do.
You know radio too well. You know radio too well.
And I said, you said, yeah, you'll do, McKenzie, get into the studio.
Not at all.
Now, what
not
was
at
the question again, sorry?
The spark for you to get into radio initially.
I fell in love with Cairns. It's funny you should ask this question. I am an accidental announcer. Mm-hmm. There was never any intention to get into radio at all. In fact, people said to me, don't even think of it. You can't even talk to anybody in the kitchen at a party. You're so shy. And I ran into a singer called Johnny O'Keefe in those days, just once again a fluke, and he said, go and be a radio DJ. If you want to go to Cairns, you'll get a job in a radio station there because, you know, any dickhead can do that. Seriously, that's what he said.
Johnny O'Keefe.
And this dickhead did it. And Johnny O'Keefe, it's the funniest story, isn't it? Mm. Anyway, funnily enough, about a year later, I was in a studio. I didn't get Cairns straight away. I was in Gympie. In comes Johnny O'Keefe. And I said, do you remember me, the guy? I was driving a cab in Sydney. And he said, no, I've never seen you before in my life. So I said, well, anyway, you got me this job. Mm. Thank you very
Amazing.
Much, because I'm actually enjoying it. And I went to Gympie and got into, I think, horses and lots of other rural interests. At first, it's funny because I loathed country music. You know, I just wanted to obliterate. I never wanted to have any country music on my show. And in 6 months, I was going out having dinners with people on country properties and going on their horses and looking at their cattle and going to sales. And country music was part of it. I love country music. And then met the Webb brothers. And what was the song? Who Put the Roux in the Stew? And that... funnily enough, went to number one in various places.
Did
across
it.
So it was the most bizarre thing. Got biggest selling record of the year at Tamworth.
Jeez.
And we were driving home and the lead singer, Fabian, said, oh, we're going to have a bit of a party to celebrate, you know, biggest selling record of the year. Johnny, can you ring a few people, some people we do shows with, you know? And I said, oh, yeah, how many? He said, oh, just whoever will come. Well, I rang 30 singers, very high-profile singers, Bulla McCanker and Slim Dusty and Buddy Williams and Buddy B, all of these people, everyone said yes, with wives or with partners. So I went back next day and I said, mate, we've got 60 people coming, and you said, 60, and... these are the best singers in the country, country music. Can't we have a little party? You know, he said, how many? I said, well, is 600 too many? Oh, well, where are we going to put them? What about bull paddock number two? We'll put them down there. So I said, I'll have to build a couple of stages because it might be more than 600.
Might be more.
6,700 came. It was the first ever Gympie Music Muster.
And look at it now.
Well, now it's 70,000,
yeah.
I understand. Yeah. They closed the gates to 70,000, you know, but this was the first one. And it was just so absolutely amazing that people in Brisbane flocked to country music. That was my shock.
And do you like country music now?
Love it.
There you go.
Love
it. You're a convert.
Love it, exactly. It's interesting. I mean, I love all music, but I do love country music. And I love the people in country music. And I love the audiences. We'd take the band out west to the little country towns. They're like, you were like family.
Yes.
You know, they ask you home to dinner and then you come for breakfast next day and they meet you after the show. Country people are just the salt of the earth.
So you were driving cabs in Sydney. No desire... predilection to get into radio at that point?
None at all.
None at all.
In fact, I'm glad you've asked that because I didn't have a future at that stage. I didn't know what I was going to do. I just thought I have to do it in Cairns because it's such a pretty part of the world. So had it not been for Johnny saying, go and be a radio DJ, it never would have happened.
Yeah.
I was the shyest person in the world. He said, just imagine you're in a room talking to your girlfriend on the phone. That's all. You and a girlfriend. Yeah. And you can't be shy talking to your girlfriend.
Because I think it would surprise listeners to hear someone like you say you are shy, or you were shy. So you wonder whether the radio studio behind the microphone was some kind of, not a shield's not the right word, but it almost gave you that confidence, you know?
Yeah, it did. I'm still no good in a room of, I don't know, 12, 14, 16 people making a speech. But on the 20th anniversary of the muster, they invited me back to Compare, and I was speaking to a mountain of human beings, and it was 70,000 people, and it wasn't an issue. I just walked out and started talking to 70,000 live people in an audience, and I thought, I can't believe this, because, you know, going back to the start, I couldn't have spoken to seven people.
To seven people.
Let alone 70,000.
Well, you've spoken to hundreds of thousands of people on the airwaves. I wanted to talk to you, John, about the power and the importance of radio, despite the emergence of Facebook and social media and 100 different digital channels and Netflix and all the rest. Radio, to me, has continued to demonstrate how important it is in the lives of people. I think particularly we were talking off air about during the COVID lockdowns, radio became, I think, a real companion for people and continues to be. Why is that? What is the enduring power of radio in your view?
In a community like this, and I look at this community as, 150 for Cairns plus surrounding areas, 200,000. Generally speaking, a whole lot of people say, well, you can't get anything done. Yes, you can. You ring the talk show. And the talk show features people like the mayor, the local councillor, the federal member, the state members, whatever. And it gives everybody a chance to change the quality of their life. It might be a barking dog. It might be getting an ambulance to the hospital. It could be an approaching cyclone. What's going to happen there? And I can just put a call out, and that person that knows the answers comes on to my radio show and talks directly, if necessary, to that person who's fearful.
Direct access.
That's what's wonderful about radio in a regional community. To me, it's solid gold.
What about, let's turn to cyclones. I think radio in particular is just so important during a crisis like a cyclone, and you would have, of course, covered so many cyclones. Is there any particular cyclonic event, whether it was Yasi, whatever it was, that I guess really stands out for you in terms of keeping the community informed, keeping them connected? Because these things stretch for days. You know, it's not just the hour that the eye of the storm is around. It's the lead up. It's the aftermath. What are some, I guess, one highlight of a cyclone that you've covered over the years?
Cyclone Joy comes straight to mind. It terrified me. It terrified everyone that saw it coming in. It was a Yazzie, and it was coming straight for Cairns like an arrow. It's just terrifying. So I remember it was at night. We had people would come in and they'd take phone calls, which has always been wonderful. Thank you for all those people that volunteered over cyclones. And people bring food in, that sort of thing. So that's all been fine. It's interesting, Tom, I've got to tell you this one, because the lady came in and said, yes, I'll answer the phones. And there was a call came through. It wasn't that for Joy, but it was whatever cyclone it was. It was the Innisfail cyclone. And gentleman said, yes, John Howard here. I want to talk to Mr. McKenzie. I said, yes. John Howard, and what's your position and what do you want to talk to him about? Well, I just need to talk to John McKenzie live on air, and just tell him it's Mr. Howard here. Mr. Howard, where do you live and what do you want to talk about?
And it wasn't.
It's the Prime Minister, John Howard. Please put me through the studio.
It's that John Howard.
But it was so typical. But these people are just wonderful. They sit through the night with me, and it's been terrific. Look, Joy was terrifying.
How long would you be on air, or how long would your shift be? It's during something like that cyclone.
Well, you don't go home.
You don't go home.
No, you're obviously not rostered, but you're called in. And if you're the most experienced or the oldest announcer, you sit through there until the crisis has passed. One thing, I've never mentioned this before, and hesitant to mention it now, but seeing there's no names, Joy was of such terrifying strength In those days, we didn't have a weather bureau as such. We had a, I think it was a cyclone warning centre, if I remember rightly, and you had direct contact on a hotline to the cyclone warning centre. And I couldn't get to air for 4 or 5 minutes because something else was going to air. And I said to him, how's it looking down your end? And he said, I will tell you this, but you must not ever repeat this. But we have just consigned 4,000 body bags to an RAAF plane out there, and those, and that's headed for Cairns. They expected Cairns to be flattened. That's the direction it was coming. That was the intensity of
that
it.
That was the
and
path.
It, and it was like an arrow. It was like Larry at Innisfail. It was coming in like an arrow. And I couldn't believe it. Suddenly it stopped. It stopped in its tracks and went directly back the way it had come. You know, and all of us up there that knew that we were in for Pisling, we just couldn't. The relief was palpable.
I'm talking, of course, you would know and recognise and love the voice, talking here with John McKenzie in the context of 4CA celebrating its 85-year anniversary this year. John, some of you've had, so many guests over so many years, from prime ministers to premiers. Who are some people that refuse to come back on because you've given them a hard time? Who are some of your favourites that you've had real clashes with on air? And they deserve it, no doubt. But are there any of those sort of...
Never had a Barney
on air?
Well, we've had some heated disagreements, but never to this stage where there was any semblance of bad manners. You know, I've had some challenging, demanding people in the studio, but we've always been able to shake hands, I think, except on a couple of... Look, there's been entertainers that I don't want to ever entertain again. I mean, I don't want to have them in the studio again. One wanted to humiliate me by taking her top off.
Right.
In front of her musicians. Now, the musicians were as disgusted as I was. She thought it was funny.
Right.
But I was compere of her show that night on stage.
Right.
So I went out to do my job, and she put on this other turn, and I thought to myself, I don't have to cop this. So I said, ladies and gentlemen, I won't mention the name now, it's all those years ago. Here she is. She wasn't ready, and I couldn't care less. And neither did the band. Two of the band members quit that night because of her appalling behaviour. There's a couple of other... In fact, I think they were all three of them female, if I remember. Yeah, they were. Big Pit songs. Rude. So dreadfully rude in studio. I just terminate the interview as quickly as possible. You know, and then they go and complain to the manager of the radio station. Oh, he didn't give me long enough on air. And why? And I... been called in. I said, look, I don't get trampled. I'm not here to be trampled for by anybody. No, I'm perfect. I'm always up front, welcoming. I never overstep the mark, I don't think, with people who come in here, but they're famous movie stars, or they're famous singers, or they're powerful politicians. So if they're rude to you, I think, well, I don't really have to cop that.
No. And isn't it, I think it's a mark of respect, because you do hold politicians to account. You do call them out when it's necessary, and I think you're in that extremely privileged and important position where you are able to do that to the highest levels of power. But what a mark of respect that, you know, they keep coming on. I think that's remarkable in itself, that you're able to give politicians a hard time when they deserve it, a fair but hard time, but they continue to come on. Look, John, so many things that we could continue to talk about, but it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on The King Review, and let's do it again.
Thank you, Gavin. Yeah, there's plenty more material if you want to dig deeper.
We will. Thanks very much, John.